Rosenhouse back on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Filling in for John Justice this week. John's out on vacation. Having a happy July 4th. We hope you hear from everybody here at Twin Cities News Talk. Have a happy July 4th. Producer Brett in with me for the last couple of days. And today, Max Reimer will join me in just a couple of minutes. We have Jason Lewis joining us next hour to react to all the news surrounding Biden, Trump, and the like. But right now, it's time for this.
It's time for Robbie's Rundown. Robbie's Rundown.
Thank you, Brett. And today's Rundown, as always, is brought to you by the Sandvold Financial Group. First up.
Number 5.
County and state officials gathered at the Rapidan Dam near Mankato this week to assess a still-closed bridge next to the dam that may be at risk of a partial or full failure as a result of the dam's worst flooding in nearly 60 years. The assessment came during a visit by Governor Tim Walz to tour the dam, which county officials said last week was at risk of imminent failure but remains standing. Erosion caused by the now receding floodwaters is threatening the stability of County Road 9 Bridge, which is just upstream of the dam, Walz and county officials said. The Blue Earth River last week swelled to the second strongest flood ever recorded at the dam as the area received some 10 inches of rain in just 1 week. The concern is that the bridge is going to be structurally damaged here and it will need to be replaced, said the governor. The bridge was constructed on top of erodible sandstone bedrock, said Ryan Thilgis, county engineer and public works director for Blue Earth County. As the river level continues to decrease and cut the riverbed elevation down, we're very concerned about the potential for partial or full failure of the bridge, Thilgis said at a news conference. The county launched an emergency operation last week to stabilize one of the bridge's supports, but because of safety concerns, officials were not able to stabilize a second support, he added. The county closed the bridge 8 days ago and is monitoring it, he said. The statements came as county and state officials come to grips with the toll of June's devastating floods. Blue Earth County on Monday filed a report with federal energy regulators detailing how raging water picked up trees and other debris that lodged into the dam's steel gates and blocked the river from pouring through the opening. That sent water over the top of the dam and around its west end, knocking out the Xcel Energy substation and eventually a nearby home. The report outlines how Blue Earth tried to clear the dam of the trees on June 25th, but five contractors felt it would be too dangerous. By the next day, the county and others decided there was no point in trying to remove debris from the gates, given that most of the water was flowing around the dam anyway. If you live in this area, feel free to leave us a talk back on the iHeartRadio app or give us a call, 651-989-5855. We've had some updates here in the last couple of weeks in the rundown here, and it looks like there could be some more trouble to come. Hopefully, they're able to fix this situation without any further issue. Robbie Rosenhouse here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. We're going through the rundown here at a Rapidan pace. No. Brett's giving me the shake of the head back there. That unfortunately didn't land.
And we are going to win the great state of Minnesota.
Well, we'll ask Max Reimer about that, but we have to finish up the rundown coming up after the break. We have a bunch of other stories to get to, including some Minneapolis parks workers. They'll start a week-long strike coming up tomorrow. We'll tell you where you can find some fireworks celebrations around the state and what EU country is the first to introduce a six-day working week, and can it be coming here to the U.S.? We'll talk about all of that next, coming up right here on Twin Cities News Talk. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Robbie Rosenhouse in. Hi, and good morning. Filling in for John Justice, producer Brett alongside. We're just kind of getting through the rundown here. Max Reimer is going to join me in studio in just a couple of minutes here to talk about Biden and Trump and what's going on. And our fearless leader, the governor, is heading to D.C. with the other governors and they're descending. So it's Walz, it's Whitmer, it's Pritzker, they're all off to D.C. to go visit our wonderful leader, Joe Biden, to see what is actually up with our president after last week's.
What do you think they'll see when they look behind the curtain?
Munchkin Land?
Wow. Someone's running the show.
Oh, man. Wow. Well, anyway, let's get back to the rundown.
Number four.
We could talk about the Wizard of Oz, though, all morning. That's perfectly fine. What character would, we really do have to get back to the rundown, though, but Brett, what character would Governor Walz be again? Would he be the Cowardly Lion? Would that be?
Hang on.
Waka waka.
Yeah, that's not.
Good one.
Thank you. Well, the union representing more than 300 Minneapolis parks workers announced Tuesday that they will strike for 1 week beginning on the July 4th holiday after 7 months of negotiations with the city, yielding no new labor contract. But hours after the announcement, the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board said it would block any employee who walks off the job from returning to work until a new contract is ratified. At a news conference Tuesday, A.J. Lang, the business manager for Laborers International Union of North America Local 363, said that for now, the union is keeping the strike to a week to minimize disruptions for residents. Although he acknowledged the July 4th holiday is the busiest time of the year for parks in the city. We love our parks, Lang said. We want to minimize the disruption to residents as much as possible, hopefully by not having to walk at all. That's the idea of limiting it. So should contract negotiations go nowhere before or after the holiday, we reserve the right to file another strike notice, Lang said. Hours later, a statement from the board spokeswoman Robin Smothers said no employee who walks off the job would be allowed to return to work until the union approves a new contract. The press contact for the union did not have a response to that late Tuesday. Barring inclement weather, although it looks like it's in the forecast, the July 4th holiday expect to bring plenty of residents to the city's parks. More on that in the next item. After 5 years of no fireworks for Independence Day, the board is hosting the return of its Red, White, and Boom show Thursday. Smothers said the strike would not affect the fireworks show, and the board developed a plan to adjust maintenance services to minimize the impact of the strike on park visitors. Lang said it's unclear how big the impact could be on visitors, but he suspected the trash collection may be disrupted, pools could close, and debris or damage from rainstorms may not be quickly resolved. It's in the board's hands to fix that. For years, Minneapolis's park workers have called upon improved wages, health insurance, and safety precautions. The union represents more than 200 permanent and more than 100 seasonal employees. In late 2022, a strike among workers was averted when both sides agreed to a two-year contract that included nearly a 5% wage increase, expanded benefits, and additional paid holidays. And let's hope that they can come to an agreement this time as well.
Number three.
Talking about fireworks, Brett, we talked about fireworks yesterday and how much you enjoy it around this time of the year, but year-round, particularly, not exactly your favorite thing to take in.
No, I would love going to a fireworks show in March. I'm just saying it doesn't exist. It's a myth.
You think it's a myth?
It's not a myth. I'm being facetious, but I've never woken up in the middle of February thinking, man, will these guys stop lighting off fireworks?
Okay.
Never. But apparently it's just me. Apparently everyone else has this experience except me.
The one thing we do both enjoy is a good fireworks show, and here are some that are coming up in the area. June 28th to July 4th, Apple Valley Freedom Days. We have the Chanhassen 4th of July celebration. There's one in Coon Rapids. Egan's July 4th Fun Fest. Eden Prairie's 4th of July hometown celebration. There's one in Delano, Forest Lake. Lake Minnetonka has one coming up today. Minneapolis Red, White, and Boom, as I talked about. The Rockin' Rockets at Mystic Lake, that'll be featuring Sister Hazel and Fastball. I believe I'll be attending that concert tomorrow night, although stay tuned. There's some fireworks, again, in Blaine, Chanhassen, Coon Rapids, Egan, Eden Prairie, Edina, Forest Lake, Lakeside Memorial Park, Maplewood at Hazel Park, Prior Lake at Lakefront Park, all at around 10 a.m., or dusk. I will say that there are two fireworks that have been canceled, Stillwater fireworks and, of course, Valley Fair fireworks. And we didn't report on this on the rundown, but Valley Fair has closed a bunch of rides there due to flooding. They're still open, but the fireworks have been shut down.
Number two.
Greece has controversially introduced a six-day working week for some businesses in a bid to boost productivity and employment in the southern European country. The regulation, which came into force on July 1st, bucks a global trend of companies exploring a shorter working week. Under the new legislation, which passed as part of a broader set of labor laws last year, employees of private businesses that provide round-the-clock services will reportedly have the option of working an additional 2 hours per day or an extra 8-hour shift. The change means a traditional 40-hour week could be extended to 48 hours per week for some businesses. Food service and tourism workers are not included in the 6-day working week initiative. The pro-business government of Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis has said the measure is both worker-friendly and deeply growth-oriented. It is designed to support employees not being sufficiently compensated for overtime work and to help crack down on the problem of undeclared labor. Workers in Greece work more than those in the U.S., Japan, and others in the 27-member EU, according to data from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Greek employees were found to have worked an average of 1,886 hours in 2022, more than the U.S. average of 1,811 and the EU average of 1,571. Greek people already work the longest hours per week in Europe. Now they may be forced to work a 6-day after this Greek government decision, said a professor of EU law at Maynooth University in Ireland. I do wonder, though, with this story here, if this ever would make its way here. I know a lot of European countries have gone to the shorter working week, but here in the States, it's been five for as long as Brett and I have been alive, and I'm sure as long as you've been alive as well. But I do wonder, though, your thoughts if either going to a 4-day week or going to a 6-day week in certain industries would be beneficial to society. You can leave us a talkback on the iHeartRadio app. We'll have the talkback of the day coming up, sponsored by JTR Roofing, just about an hour from now. Max Reimer will join me in studio just a couple of minutes from now. We're heading through the rundown. And the big story of the day, well,
number one.
Some elected officials loyal to President Joe Biden raised fresh questions on Tuesday about his 2024 reelection bid, with one calling for him to step aside, a shift after many defended him in the wake of last week's shaky debate performance. Whether Biden continues his 2024 bid for president after his halting debate performance against presidential candidate Donald Trump is largely his decision, Democrats and political strategists have said. But Biden is under pressure. Some donors have called for him to step aside, and other Democrats are worrying openly that he is not equipped to beat Trump in November. There are 25 Democratic members of the House of Representatives preparing to call for Biden to step aside if he seems shaky in the coming days, according to one House Democratic aide. A second House Democratic aide said moderate House Democrats in competitive districts, often called frontliners, were getting hammered with questions in their districts this week. U.S. Representative Lloyd Doggett became the first congressional Democrat to call for Biden to withdraw from the presidential race on Tuesday. He told NBC News that he hoped other Democratic lawmakers would follow his lead. Quote, "It looks like the dam has broken," the second aide said. That pretty much says it all. We'll have a lot more on this story here with President Joe Biden and 25 House Democrats reportedly preparing to call for him to end his reelection bid. We'll talk with Max Reimer next about who could step in for him if there's a possibility of an open convention. And speaking of an open convention, Bill Maher, who says smart and dumb things in the same sentence sometimes, he wrote an op-ed for the New York Times that I want to read on the air. And I think it's a fascinating thought process on his part, and I want to let you guys hear it. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. Robbie Rosenhaus filling in for John Justice here on Twin Cities News Talk. We'll have Jason Lewis coming up in the 8 a.m. hour, former congressman here from the state of Minnesota, to talk about Biden, Trump, and what's next as we head towards the November election. But coming up next here in studio will be Max Reimer. He's running for state office. He's a friend of the show, and he's next right here on Twin Cities News Talk.
Come on, Robbie. Come on. You know that Walz and all the other liberal governors are just flying monkeys.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. That was a good talk back there. Robbie Rosenhaus filling in for John Justice this week. He's on vacation. We'll both be back in our usual spot on Monday with a ton to talk about. It is my pleasure to welcome in digital guru, good human, running for state office, and also Proud to call him my friend, Max Reimer, joining him, joining me in studio. How are you, Max?
I'm good. Good morning, Robbie. It's good to be back in.
Thanks so much for joining me. We got a ton to get to here. I want to start out, obviously, with that, with the Wizard of Oz audio and what we've been referring to. And the Democratic governors will be heading to D.C. I mentioned Governor Walz is the head of the committee, Gretchen Whitmer, J.B. Pritzker. So they'll all be heading to D.C. To check in on the president. And that's got to be alarming.
Yeah, I would say so. You know what would make for good television is if all of these wannabe president Midwestern governors were actually showing up to the White House for a reality show. Yeah. Who wants to be the next president?
Yeah, there you go.
Because all of them do. Yes. Tim Walz does. Yes. J.B. Pritzker does. Gretchen Whitmer does. Andy Beshear in Kentucky does. They all want to be president.
If Walz had to phone a friend, would he phone Ventura? Would he phone yeah. Amy? I mean, who would he phone?
Ilhan Omar.
Yeah, who would he phone? Well, only if it was a question on certain subjects.
Yeah.
Right. But no, I totally agree. It's just a clown show. And this has to send up certain signals. Basically, that the left is worried. I mean, we've heard it. We were just talking off the air about certain things on certain networks being said, like this from a reporter, MJ Lee, on CNN, talking about Biden and his excuses for why he performed so badly at the debate.
Apparently, the president apologized to everyone in the room, saying this is not an excuse, but it is an explanation. And he blamed the extensive foreign travel that he did in the lead up to the CNN debate for his poor performance. Just a reminder for everyone, he did go to France for the D-Day anniversary, and then he turned right back around and went to Italy for the G7 summit. And he told the room, I didn't listen to my staff. So the suggestion there being his staff did not think this was a good idea. And then he apparently said, I almost fell asleep on stage. I just want to unpack this new explanation for a second, as the explanation for why his debate performance was so bad, I find it a little bit puzzling, and frankly, I'm not sure that a lot of people are going to find this reassuring. If anything, some folks might hear this and be, even more concerned. Yes, there were two foreign trips in the lead up to the June 27th CNN debate, but he returned from Italy on June 15th. The debate, again, was on June 27th, so we're talking about roughly 12 days in between when he was back in the States. And remember, a part of those 12 days, about a full week, he actually spent with his advisors at Camp David for the sole purpose of really focusing on debate prep. So why is the president falling asleep on the debate stage at the hours of 9 p.m. to 10:30?
Well, the meeting with the governors, Max, is notable because up until this point, it's mostly been Mr. Biden's top aides and advisors who have been reaching out to elected Democrats to reassure them after his terrible debate performance. Members of the Democratic Governors Association held a call Monday to discuss the ongoing response to last week's debate and a widespread concern among the state chief executives that the president has done little outreach to governors, specifically over the course of the campaign year, according to two people familiar with arrangements for the call. And clearly, that has ratcheted up, because now, absolutely, after that call, they are now all heading and descending on D.C.
And I think what is telling about this whole situation is that if you are Biden and you have such a catastrophic debate performance where it is laid bare for the entire country to see that you are in severe, obvious mental decline, if I was Biden's advisors and I thought he was capable of doing it, what you would do on day one after that debate to dispel all rumors, to make it clear that Biden actually has mental acuity, is you would go on a pretty intense press tour where you take unscripted questions. You show that you can do a press conference for 2 hours. You can put to bed all of the rumors that your mental health is still there. And he has not done that. And I think we all know why he has not done that, because he can't. He can't. We actually have a president who is not capable of doing the job. And I think MJ Lee from CNN, I think her point is well taken too, that Biden had so much time to prepare for this debate and still had a performance like that. It's been interesting to watch the mainstream media just kind of coalesce against Biden. I think if you would have asked me before the debate, if he would drop out of the race, I would have said a 0% chance. But it's the full court press at this point.
And you look at kind of the narrative that the left is trying to paint for the election, basically, to keep him afloat. I mean, you hear Andy Beshear telling reporters Monday that the debate performance was rough, but that he'll continue to support Mr. Biden so long as he continues to be in the race. I mean, that's kind of the narrative that the left has been taking. But people inside Biden's inner circle, like the vice president, like Anthony Blinken, well, they've been parroting the same narratives. Take a listen.
The point has to be performance in terms of what a president does. A right, president who incites an insurrection against the Capitol. No, but I got the point that you're making about a 1.5 hour debate tonight. I'm talking about 3.5 years of performance in work that has been historic.
But whether is that it be the man who we saw on the stage tonight, is that the person you see in meetings every day?
I think what the world knows, the world has experienced over 3.5 years, not one night, is exactly the kind of leadership that he's brought to bear on problems that are common for so many countries, particularly so many of the democracies around the world. And as I've seen it, again, going around the world, there's a desire, there's a thirst for American engagement, for American leadership. Even when we have disagreements with countries, they still want us in this and even leading to try to get to a better place. And they've seen a president who's reinvested America in the world, reinvested in these alliances, in these partnerships.
So the question, Max, is with the narrative, and you heard the same words spoken by Blinken and our vice president there about look at the last 3.5 years, don't look at 90 minutes. The problem is the American public, I think, grasps the concept of, like, you don't base who you're going to vote on strictly what this person has done. It's what this person is going to do and represent.
Right.
And in 4 years' time, what is he going to look like? What is he going to Absolutely. Sound like? The inmates are going to literally run the asylum if he gets reelected.
And they have been for the last 3.5 years. This idea that the media just woke up one day, watched a debate, and then finally figured out that Joe Biden's brain doesn't work is hilarious to me, because for the only reason that Joe Biden has had this perceived and what they're trying to paint as a successful presidency is because we have had an uncritical media and political apparatus in this country that knew what was happening. But it was finally laid bare for everybody. Independents, people who don't pay attention to politics, it was laid bare for those people that Joe Biden is not capable of doing this job. And he probably hasn't been since day one. What I find interesting is that from Kamala Harris to Anthony Blinken, they're trying to fall back on this successful track record, as if the last 3.5 years have been wonderful
right.
for the American people. I actually think that's a miscalculation, too, because grocery prices are 4 times higher. The border is wide open. There's chaos in the streets. It's not been a good 3.5 years. So this idea that, hey, ignore your lying eyes. Don't pay attention to that debate. Pay attention to Joe Biden's record. I don't actually think is the win they think it is.
Well, there was a lot of lies told in that debate by Joe Biden. In fact, the X account RNC Research put up a long list of whoppers told by Biden. I mean, the Border Patrol endorsed my position. The Border Patrol Union has said they had never will endorse Biden. I mean, when he was president, he was separating babies from their mothers, putting them in cages. When Biden was vice president, the Obama-Biden administration put thousands of children in cages, and Biden defended it. And then the losers and suckers thing that's been completely debunked. And
fine people.
Yeah, fine people on both sides.
Total hoax.
Yeah, he says if he loses again, there could be a bloodbath. This is a debunked hoax entirely manufactured by the Biden campaign. So, I mean, the very fine people thing, even CNN's Jake Tapper
Yes.
Defended that. So listen, they both lied quite a bit during that debate. And frankly, if you look through all of the nonsense and you just look at the facts of who is running and what they're standing for, it's a clear choice. It's not even close.
What I found funny, and I want to bring this up because I haven't been on the show since the debate happened, but what I found funny was that Joe Biden and Donald Trump were taking jabs at each other. He's the worst president in history. He's the worst president in history. Border this, border that, abortion ban this. And both of them took it kind of like in stride.
Yeah.
Donald Trump almost fell out of his stand when Joe Biden brought up his golf game.
Yes.
That was the thing that really offended Donald Trump, that I think Donald Trump would say was the biggest whopper, was that Joe Biden was a 6 handicap golfer. he couldn't take it.
Let's listen back to some of the debate.
Do you support any legal limits on how late a woman should be able to terminate a pregnancy?
I supported Roe v. Wade, which had 3 trimesters. The first time is between the woman and the doctor. Second time is between the doctor and an extreme situation. The third time is between the doctor, between the woman and the state. The idea that the politicians, that the founders wanted the politicians to be the ones making decisions about women's health is ridiculous. That's the last, no politician should be making that decision. A doctor should be making those decisions. That's how it should be run. That's what you're going to do. And if I'm elected, I'm going to restore Roe v. Wade.
And to that point, Biden was long a skeptic of Roe v. Wade, even saying the Supreme Court's decision went too far before he ultimately shifted his position when it became politically advantageous. So even talking about golf games and abortion rights, it was quite the debate that ran the gamut from A to Z.
Yeah, and I think the one thing I want to say is that when you talk about the media saying that Trump lied during the debate and then it's obvious that Joe Biden is lying, Trump did not lie during the debate. Now, what Trump does is he gets numbers wrong. He says, I'm the best. He in typical Trump fashion, he's more, how do I say this? He basically overemphasizes certain things, but the general direction of his debate and the claims that he was making are correct. You know, so we don't know how many illegal immigrants are here. We don't know what the debt looks like, actually. But with Joe Biden, when you talk about fine people on both sides, when you talk about those types of lies, those are substantive, provable falsehoods that Joe Biden engaged in. And it's all he has left. It was a really sad thing to see that was the only, those are the only confident statements he was making, was just brazen lies.
And he wasn't making a lot of sense either.
Now, elsewhere in those remarks, the president did condemn neo-Nazis and white supremacists. So he's not saying that the neo-Nazis and white supremacists are very fine people.
We significantly increased the number of asylum officers. By the way, the Border Patrol endorsed my position. In addition to that, we found ourselves in a situation where when he was president, he was what got me involved to run in the first place after my son had died. I decided in Iraq.
Lies, lies, lies. Yeah. Just babbling
just over
on,
and over
just
again.
Babbling on and on. And then yesterday we had KJP trying to defend it.
People that we've talked to describe an accelerating series of episodes, moments when over the course of the last several weeks, the president appeared confused or listless or would lose the thread of a conversation in private meetings at the G7, in Normandy, at the White House. Not all the time, not saying that that's the way he is all the time and that there's clearly moments people say that he's forceful and with it and all of that. But these people suggest that that what happened, what Americans saw at the debate, has a precursor. What do you say to that?
So I want to be mindful and respect your reporting. I have not read it. I have not seen it. So it's hard for me to respond to it directly. But what I can speak to more broadly is that I have engagement with the president pretty regularly. What I see is a strong, resolute president who's always willing and able to work on behalf of the American people. I do not know who these folks are that you speak of, so it's hard for me to talk about that and to speak to that. I can just speak to my experience and go back again on the president's record and what he's been able to deliver on behalf of the American people. So I just do want to be mindful.
Now, I do not envy her yesterday because she, and we'll have some more audio from KJP coming up next hour. Also, Jason Lewis, former congressman here in the state, to join us to talk about Biden and Trump. Max Reimer with me in studio. Robbie Rosenas here on Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Producer Brett along for the ride. John Justice out on vacation this week. We'll both be in our usual chairs coming up on Monday. But as far as that audio goes, I mean, KJP, I do not envy her, because for her to get up there yesterday and for her to defend this and basically kind of because it had come out that the call with the governors was happening or did happen.
Yeah.
And that the visit was eventually going to happen. So she had to deal with that issue. Plus, she had to deal with the debate issue. And she's not my favorite person by any stretch. I mean,
had it or hit it, drag queens.
Oh, hit that.
I mean, anybody who has that type of morals, I have no time for it, which is why we play the audio here to make fun of, to make light of the situation. But there's no making light of the president's mental acuity, especially if he's in line for a reelection. We'll get to potentially some candidates who maybe could replace him at an open convention. Bill Maher had a piece in the New York Times where he had an op-ed about why there should be an open convention. But Max, before we go to break here, I just your thoughts on KJP and kind of what her kind of words there meant to you, and kind of how hard her job is moving forward.
Yeah, and she's had a hard job, quote unquote, the whole time. I mean, she herself is a liar, and she works for a liar. So I don't have sympathy for her per se. But it is going to get a lot harder because the media has gotten smart now to what Joe Biden actually is. And I think it was illuminating. It was like 2 days ago where somebody had asked KJP if she could answer definitively, does Joe Biden have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, something that would cause a debate performance like that? And she said no, but then she said she basically conceded that she would be willing to have Joe Biden take a mental acuity test if Trump had to take one too. I mean, that admission alone, and from that to Kamala Harris saying it was a rough night to basically everybody turning on Biden, it's like there's something really wrong here.
Yeah, no, definitely something wrong. We have some more audio coming up from KJP at the top of the hour. Jason Lewis is going to join us next hour. But again, we'll have some more coming up here on potentially an open convention and who could replace him. I have an op-ed from Bill Maher that I want to read. Plus, coming up at the bottom of next hour, Max and Brett will take on each other in a short quiz. So we'll have some fun with that. Robbie Rosenas here on Twin Cities News Talk, filling in for John Justice. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. You can leave us a talk back on the iHeartRadio app by clicking the microphone button in the bottom right-hand portion of your screen. We'll be back right after this.